Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the places where that war is being waged rather actively is north of our border, Canada. We have lots of things that unfortunately bear on our security as well as other national interests that are north of the border. But not often understood or remarked upon is the rising influence of Islamists, Islamic supremacists in Canada. A man who is tracking their activities and doing an heroic job of countering it through exposure and stimulating public awareness and engaging them is our guest for this full hour, a very special program of Secure Freedom Radio. He is Marc Labouie. He is the founder and director of a simply indispensable web-based investigative magazine he calls Point de Bascule, or Tipping Point, based in Quebec, where he lives. We are very pleased to have him with us. He has been really indispensable to us in our efforts to understand what's going on in Canada and what it might mean for us, and to visit with him for a full hour on, in particular, some developments of late that we'll talk about in the course of our program that are very ominous, both for freedom in Canada, specifically freedom of expression, but also quite possibly for us here as well. Marc Labouie, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's good to have you back. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You and I have talked recently about a bill that is now making its way through the Quebec provincial parliament. I want to come to that in a moment, but I thought we might start, Marc, by talking a little bit about the context. At Point de Bascule, you have been now for quite some time chronicling developments. How would you characterize what is happening with respect to this phenomenon of Islamic extremism, if you will, Islamic supremacism, Islamism, the effort to impose Sharia in a Western nation, namely yours?
Canada is really, it seems to be a major stage from which specifically the Muslim Brotherhood are able to operate. And there's also a lot of Middle Eastern influence, also when I'm talking about the Gulf states. For example, up to recently, in North America, the Saudi embassy was only based in Washington, D.C., and it was through the Saudi embassy that many Islamic organizations based in Canada were receiving funding or support, since there was no Saudi embassy. Now, just to give you an idea of how important it is for the Saudi, Canada is for the Saudis, they say that the largest Saudi embassy in the world after the United States, it's the Canadian embassy. The Canadian Saudi Embassy. They have, of course, and through many years, funded several of the Islamic institutions. And then, as one of the leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, one of the core leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, Youssef El Qardawi, once said, the Muslim Brotherhood are able to spread and grow and progress through the, he used the term, true petrodollars that was given by rich individuals from the Gulf state and the organizing power of the Muslim Brotherhood. And this cannot be more true than in Canada.
Talk a little bit about that sort of organizing power of the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, we've been making a major effort down here, Marc, to talk about what the Brotherhood has called civilization jihad, as found in their explanatory memorandum, their secret plan, which was, as you know, introduced into the Holy Land Foundation trial. But give us a flavor of how that is being manifested in your country.
Well, to give you an idea, not too long ago, two major leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood have specifically targeted Canada, the legal system of Canada, as being a weak spot. There's Tariq Ramadan in 2004 in an article in Egypt Today who basically says that he recommended to Muslims not to use the term Sharia, because in itself it's laden with negative connotation for the Western mind, and there's no need to stress that. But then he says that it's easier to work without mentioning any Sharia terms and use the legal provisions to be able to further the principles of Sharia into the legal system. And then he added this. He says Canada is one of the most open legal system in the world to do that. Then there was also Jamal Badawi, another very important, especially in North America, but a very, very important leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, who wrote an article in early 2000 and said that Muslims, people, leaders from the Muslim community, they should become judges and civil servants in Canada in order to use their discretionary power whenever there was either policies that would contradict Sharia principles, or if they could, to be able to apply Sharia principles.
You know, Mark, this is tremendously important because what we are confronting here as well is an effort to use our judiciary to promote Sharia. It's one of the institutions that's under assault from the Muslim Brotherhood. But in your experience, has this plan succeeded? Are there, in fact, Muslim judges, not just judges who are willing to sort of defer to those who are seeking accommodations on Sharia?
Well, we're seeing that it's growing and expanding. How can we measure the pace of the progress? One of the ways that we're measuring it is there's an organization called the Muslim Association of Canada, which when it started was totally linked. It was the brother or the sister organization of MAS, the Muslim American Society in the United States. So their roots to the Muslim Brotherhood has been clearly identified on their own website. They do say that they're promoting the ideology and Islam as understood by Hassan al-Banna and how it's culminated in the 20th century with the Muslim Brotherhood organization. This being said, they are the largest with ISNA.
That would be the Islamic Society of North America, yeah.
Yes, but the Canadian branch of ISNA. So they are the, according to a report that was just published a couple of months ago, they are both of them together the largest real estate owner or controller or stakes of Islamic institution in Canada and specifically in Quebec.
Again, this is part of going back to what you were saying at the beginning. And again, our guest is Mark Labouy. He is with us for the full hour, the founder and director of Point de Bascule, a web-based investigative magazine known as The Tipping Point in English. The effort by this North American Islamic Trust to buy up mosques funded as a line item in, I believe it is, the Muslim World League accounts of the Saudi government is, as you say now, taking a dominant position in ownership of the Muslim communities, institution, mosques, cultural centers, and so on. How does that translate into control as a practical matter for the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, the way what we're noticing, let's say, and if we compare Montreal in the Quebec province, if we compare Montreal and a smaller city such as Quebec City, in the Montreal area, we can say that there are those institutions that are totally controlled by the Muslim Association of Canada, and then there's affiliates. And then you're going to see also another level where it's going to be you're going to see leaders that are linked with the Muslim Association of Canada who are in board of directors of mosque, where we don't necessarily yet have looked into if there's any trace, but you can see the influence, the affiliation through arm's length. And in the Quebec City area, for example, we can say that it's almost 100% of the institutions that are linked to one level or another to the Muslim Association of Canada. So it's pretty important. It's pretty significant. That means the ideas that they're pushing forward, the type of Islam that they're teaching, is the Islam that is aligned with the radical ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood.
This is the Sharia program being advanced by the Brotherhood's Civilization Jihad. And Mark, we're going to pause for a moment here, but when we come back, I want to talk with you a little bit more about another strain of this jihadist enterprise and the extent to which you are also seeing it in evidence in Canada, namely the outriders of Iran and the efforts that they're making, certainly down here, but I suspect also there, to advance their own strain of this this Sharia program, and what it might mean for freedom-loving people on both sides of the Canadian border. That and more with Marc Labouie of Plan de la Bascule, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back visiting with the founder and director of an important web-based investigative magazine in Canada. It has been operating since 2010 under the leadership of its director, Marc Labouie. It is called Point de Bascule, or Tipping Point, and it has done absolutely superb work in monitoring and exposing and challenging the efforts of Islamists of various stripes to use Canada, its liberal judicial arrangements, its immigration policies, its human rights commissions and the like for very nefarious purposes. In fact, what the Brotherhood calls civilization jihad. Mark, again, we're delighted to have you with us. Let me just ask you very quickly about whether there is evidence in Canada, as now here in the United States, of a sort of counterpart to the Muslim Brotherhood's operations being mounted by the government of Iran and some of its outliers.
There's absolutely a very, very strong footprint of Iranian influence in Canada, so much so that just two, three years ago, the Canadian embassy, the Canadian government basically closed its relationship with Iran and closed the Canadian Iranian embassy in Ottawa. This was triggered most likely, but there was a series of events that happened, and we discovered that some of the schools, there was an interview that was done with one of the diplomats that was operating out of the Iranian embassy in Ottawa, and he basically says that he was going to use the multicultural policy in Canada to be able to progress the Iranian culture. And he also said in the interview, and I'm paraphrasing here because it's out of memory, but he also expressed in Parsi, that he would the third and even fourth generations of Iranians that are established here should still have an allegiance or loyalty to the motherland.
And that's certainly something that they are actively trying to foster with their operations in Canada and elsewhere. The Iranian will be able to do more of that, presumably, with the $150 billion windfall that the United States government seems to have in mind giving them. Mark, you were talking a bit about Iranian influence in Canada. We were discussing earlier the Muslim Brotherhood, the Sunni stripe. Give us a sense of the importance that Canada has been for this program that the Islamists call the Hijra, kind of colonization of non-Muslim lands. Is Canada specifically targeted in your judgment, and is its immigration policy something that is readily exploited by such folks?
On the first part of the question, the target, was Canada targeted? Yes, it has been since the early 80s. Actually, the founder of the IIIT, the Islamic Institution, or the International Institution of Islamic Thought, an agency of the Muslim Brotherhood, which, by the way, has also Shiite scholars included in them, the founder, called Ismail Farouki, was based out of Montreal, by the way, for a long time before he moved to the United States and before he got assassinated in the late 80s. But he basically gave a speech in Calgary in the early 80s where he spoke about this migration of Muslims coming into Canada and how he basically explained that the role of the Muslim is basically not to integrate into the local society, but to keep a distance.
Yeah, you know, this is such a key point, and I want you to explain that further, but it is very much part and parcel of what these Islamic supremacists are doing with the kind of influence that they're exercising in their communities, and most especially by owning the mosques and the cultural centers and having these well-financed brotherhood organizations, is to essentially prevent or certainly discourage the integration of those communities into the native population, assimilate, if you would. And give us a sense of how successful they are in keeping essentially those if not literally ghetto walls, certainly a ghetto mindset.
Well, just to give you an idea of how serious it is, Tariq Ramadan gave a speech, and it was in the United States, I think it was in Texas, in front of an organization called Islamic Circle of North America. And in this speech, he said that
Muslim Brotherhood Front.
Yes, absolutely, and mainly linked through the Pakistani branch with Sayyid Madhudi, which was also a good friend of Tariq Ramadan's father. But basically, he says in there that we should not integrate into American society. Our role is to colonize, and I quote him. And there's a video of this. We are here to colonize the United States of America with our understanding of Islam, with our values. That was just two, 3 years ago.
And again, Tariq Ramadan, folks, it's important to understand what Mark Labuya is saying here. Tariq Ramadan is a prince of the Muslim Brotherhood. His grandfather founded it. His father was a leader of it. He himself has been a third-generation preeminent figure and was allowed into the United States after a period of time when he was not permitted to come here under the Bush administration at the direct orders of Hillary Clinton, and I assume under the influence of her aide, Huma Abedin, who also has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. And Mark, this point, and he's literally used the word colonization, and I hope you will send us that video because we'd very much like to post it. These are the sorts of clues as to what these guys are up to. But I wanted, just before we leave the topic of immigration, discuss, if you would, how the efforts that are being made to bring Muslim populations, and again, this is not about Muslims per se, it is about Muslims who are practicing or embracing or seeking to impose on the rest of us this Sharia program, how they're, well, not only taking up residence in Canada, but also finding their way here in the United States.
Well, the way it goes, we have a very, very strong intake of immigrants in the world. Canada is supposed to be, per capita, the country that welcomes the most immigrants in the world, and a huge proportion of it comes from predominantly Muslim countries. And what's happening is there's all these welcoming institutions, integration type of institution, people who help immigrants to come and establish themselves in different areas of Canada. And many of those institutions are more and more controlled by leaders from the Muslim community, and thus, by default, a lot of Muslim Brotherhood leaders also control some of these. So, and especially where the Muslim Brotherhood are controlling them, then there's this blurred. This is why there's a distinction to be made between integration and assimilation. They are integrating, that's for sure. But what culture are they assimilating to? That is another question. And pretty much right now, we can see that the tendency right now is, yes, they are integrating, but many of them are not assimilating to Canadian culture. They're keeping themselves very, very surely different.
So, but Mark, you're not seeing something that could be, and at least over time, a sort of, well, ghettoized community, a no-go zone, ultimately, as we've now seen being acknowledged even by governments that quibbled about the use of that term a few months back, but now are being acknowledged in Germany and France and elsewhere. That's not happening in Canada?
Well, this isolation for now, the way it's manifesting, the no-go zone could happen, and the trigger would be pretty close, because what we are seeing, especially a city like Montreal, which was one of the rare cities where there was no predominantly, or if you want a ghetto-like areas, there was no ghetto-like. Everywhere you can walk was relatively safe. And now you're starting to see very, very strong, dominated North African neighborhoods, and they're growing and expanding.
New immigrants are coming there, presumably, rather than elsewhere in the country. Mark, hold the thought. We've got to pause for another moment. When we come back, I want to talk a bit about what's happening there that is of importance, but more broadly, what the government of Canada is doing about the threat that arises from these Islamists. That and more with Mark Labuya, the director as well as the founder of the indispensable investigative magazine online, Point de Bascule, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The death of 1,000 self-inflicted cuts continues to cause Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign to hemorrhage political support. Recently, she tried to staunch the bleeding by announcing that she takes responsibility for not having used a government server for her official emails. But just what does that mean? Is Hillary taking responsibility for having breached federal regulations and her own policies by treating classified information in a way that virtually ensured it would be compromised. She either knew or had a duty to know that's what she was doing. Or is she taking responsibility for giving Huma Abedin, a woman with extensive personal and family ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, routine access to extremely sensitive U.S. government and foreign supply data? Truly taking responsibility would mean pleading guilty to criminal charges, and Hillary is certainly not doing that. This is Frank Affney. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
They are fathers and mothers, someone's best friend, and America's true heroes. Whether out on the front lines or here on the home front, our troops are sacrificing every day, making sure that we continue to have the freedoms that make this country great.
Hi, I'm Congressman Chris Stewart. As a former Air Force pilot, I understand that our troops and their families continue to give so much for our country. Let them know you appreciate their service. A simple thank you can go a long way.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. This week, Democratic New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez gave a powerful speech rejecting the nuclear deal with Iran, in which he said, "If Iran is to acquire a nuclear bomb, it will not have my name on it." Menendez also noted that he voted against the Iraq War, a subtle dig at President Obama's claim that opponents of the Iran deal are the same people who pushed the United States into the Iraq War. Menendez joined Senator Chuck Schumer, who announced his opposition last week. At least 10 Democratic House members are also opposing the deal. When former Democratic Senator and presidential candidate Jim Webb announced his opposition, he criticized attacks by Obama administration supporters on Schumer, which included questioning Schumer's loyalty to the United States. Members of Congress must ignore the increasingly desperate efforts by the Obama administration to defend the nuclear deal with Iran. Congress must vote to kill this deal. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're having a fascinating one-hour conversation with Mark LeBuy, one of the most courageous and, I think, clear-eyed observers and, well, monitors of what is happening with Islamic supremacism in his native Canada. He has an online investigative magazine called Point de Bascule, or Tipping Point, that has been doing simply indispensable work in this vein. And we're delighted to have him with us to talk about what's happening in Canada and what it might mean for the United States, both by example and perhaps as a stepping stone. Mark, let me pick up on something we were talking about before the break, and that is the nature of the communities in Canada that are being dominated as well as populated by people who are not simply Muslims, but Muslims who embrace this Sharia program and all that that entails, notably the end of freedom for those who are subjected to it. You were describing how North Africans are beginning to populate areas of Montreal. Give us a flavor of how you see that likely to evolve over time.
Well, the evolution of it is it's progressing extremely fast, and that's the approach that the Muslim Brotherhood and these very more politically savvy Islamist groups are doing. It's they're using nonviolence means in order to make Sharia progress in different ways. So, for example, in Ontario, there was this scene called the Musketeeria. They're able to justify to the school administration that on Fridays the kids are leaving, they need to go to mosque. If you want them to stay in the school, then we can transform the cafeteria, and then you have an imam coming to school, and then suddenly the whole Friday afternoon is basically allocated. The entire Muslim population in the school now is basically controlled by these Islamists. even the parents of there's so much peer pressure. Even the Muslims that don't want to mingle with Islamists are kind of in a bind. They don't feel that the local or the school board is protecting them. You have other cases also, and this is very insidious, where they've done so much outreach with police forces and school boards that they basically disarm them to be able to act and apply the very principles and laws and provisions that we're having that were usually applied in the past. So, for example, there was, I don't know if you've heard, one of the most horrendous honor killing that happened in Canada was the Shafia trial, where three of his daughters, three women were killed. They were put into a car and then drowned into the waterway. But what happened prior to this, and this we've learned in court, is that the daughters were already threatened by their father to be killed. So they went to go see the police several times. The police couldn't protect them. They would put them back into the family hole. Then they went to go see the child protection agency. Then again, several times, they didn't do anything to protect them. And then they went to go see different administrators from the schools. And again, the school board or the school principal, they couldn't do anything. And then they got killed. And this is the real problem that we're having in Canada. It's not so much the Islamist. It's the fact that they're opening the door through these outreach programs, disarming themselves, and not applying the law.
We're seeing a lot of that here, too, Mark, as you know, with the efforts of the Obama administration to purge the lexicon from things that have to do with Sharia or jihad, any connection to Islam. And more broadly, the kind of indoctrination that's taking place in our law enforcement communities and of communities of government in other sort of forms. But what I'm particularly keen on is understanding how the Harper government, the federal government of Canada, is contending with all of this, because at the same time, it seems they've been rather more robust, certainly, than our government about the Islamist threat and the threat, of course, to Israel, but also the dangers. They promoted a rather substantially enhanced counterterrorism bill in the federal legislature recently. In fact, two of my colleagues, Claire Lopez and Kyle Scheidler, testified about it. This is really a peculiar, it seems, disconnect. How does this circle get squared?
Well, it is a disconnect. There's, on the one hand, what the government is saying, and by the way, after the two terror attack last fall that occurred in Canada, one of the reasons that the Harper government, what could explain the Harper government's rise in the polls was the fact that for once we had a politician that was describing the situation as it was. So he used the term jihad, he used the term mosques, use the term Islamic radicalism rather than, you know, everything around it. And this was much appreciated even in the far-left constituency of Quebec. People were voting for Harper simply or approving Harper simply because he was saying and describing the facts for what they were. However, we cannot say that the entire Harper government is exactly doing the right things. For example, we're having two terrorist attacks, and we're discovering that even after those terrorist attacks, some of the core leaders in charge of security from the RCMP are doing outreach program with known individuals that have Googleable history with radical or individuals inviting extremely radical preachers or even linked with organizations that are funding terror organizations now. For example, ISNA Canada was just listed. Not only did it lost its charitable status, but it was listed as a terrorist organization. And just to give you an example, it was also under Harper government that an individual by the name of Hussein Hamdani was able to give a PowerPoint presentation to the Minister of Public Security to be able to explain that, to be able to describe the Islamic threat, it's better not to use Islamic terms. And then the result of this, it was right after the new CSIS, the new Intelligence Security Director, Michel Coulomb, who replaced Richard Fadden, the first report that he presented to the Standing Senate Committee on National Security and Defense, in early 2004 was basically, for the first time in a decade, stripped of any terms to describe the Islamic threat. The only term that they used for the first time was Al-Qaeda-like.
Just before we leave this topic, Mark Labuie, do you have a sense of whether this is going to feature, this portfolio of issues, shall we say, is going to feature in the national elections that are now underway in Canada to be consummated in October?
It doesn't seem to be coming out. They're talking about the bill, C-51. Apart from that, there seems to be the Harper government just seems to be shying away a little bit from that. They're trying to push the record. I'm not sure that it's coming out to the forefront. And I think they're running away from what was successful for them. I mean, the population wants to hear the real issues. And I'm not sure right now that this issue is being highlighted as it should be.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it again has bearing on what's happening south of the border to a considerable degree as well, I suspect, as to how the Canadian government is addressing this. Mark, before we have to take another break, I just wanted to ask you, to the extent that this multiculturalism, as you talked about, is that contributing to the difficulty that the Canadian government is having and the Canadian, well, society more broadly, maintaining the kind of situational awareness about this internal civilizational jihadist threat that it should, in your judgment?
Absolutely. There's a contradiction in the what we call the Canadian values, which instead of being, let's say, the rule of law and all these different aspects of what creates the Canadian experience, they have included inside the, I think, the Constitution, the multiculturalism as being part of the constitutional right. But the problem is, multiculturalism per se is quite an offensive when you let people, you know, mingle and interchange with each other. But the problem is when multiculturalism is a policy. So there's all kinds of policies that are enabling group identity that some of these cultures where they basically set the stage to say all cultures are equal. The individual is slowly and more and progressively put aside in terms of and being replaced more and more by blocks or group identity. So we're having people with culture where honor killing is very, very important. We've had the case of Mahmoud Ayoub going to court to defend a man who killed his own wife. It was declared as an honor killing, and he tried to lower the bar in terms of how he would be accused, lower the bar in order for the Canadian court system would recognize the fact that he comes from a culture where they don't see women the same way they do over here.
Yeah, no, we've got a lot of that going on in American courts as well. Mark Labuie, hold the thought. We're going to come right back with our fourth and final installment of this very important interview about Canada freedom and what is going on as it is assaulted by Islamic supremacists and what it might mean for us. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement, and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. The Obama administration's efforts to defend the controversial nuclear deal with Iran has become ugly, very ugly. Last week, during a speech at American University, the president portrayed opponents of the deal as partisan Republicans in common cause with Death to America chanting Iranian hardliners. The Tablet, a daily online Jewish magazine, ran an editorial on August 7th claiming that the president is using code anti-Semitic language to criticize Jewish Americans for opposing the Iran deal and to blame them if the deal is rejected by Congress. Some liberal pro-Obama groups have gone further and have questioned the loyalty to this country of Jewish members of Congress who oppose the deal, such as New York Senator Chuck Schumer. The president and his supporters are stooping to smearing opponents of the deal because the agreement is so awful and they cannot defend it on its merits. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined once again by Mark Labuie. We've been talking with him throughout this hour about Canada and the threat that it is facing at the moment from Islamic supremacism, the effort being made by people of both the Sunni and Shiite traditions within Islam, notably the Muslim Brotherhood and outfits like Hezbollah, working with the Iranian government,
seeking to use Canada's freedoms to try to advance their agenda, which is the antithesis of freedom. It is an object lesson for all of us here in the United States as well. Nobody is chronicling it better, more fulsomely than Marc Labuie. He is the founder and director of an online investigative magazine entitled Point de Bascule, or Tipping Point. And Mark, we've been talking about the sort of context and the various policies that are contributing to, well, a serious assault on Canada, this civilization jihad, as the Brotherhood calls it. We also talked a bit about the federal level government and somewhat confused policies and attitudes towards what your country is confronting. Let's turn to Quebec, the province in Canada in which you live, French-speaking and rather left, as you've indicated. There is a piece of legislation now under active consideration in the Quebec provincial legislature called Quebec Bill 59. Remind us what that's about and talk a bit about your testimony concerning that legislation recently.
Bill 59 is a response to the two terror attack that happened last fall. And we needed to act really urgently to be able to reassure the population that their measures are going to be taken specifically to address the rise, the incredible rise of radicalization of people from the Muslim community, specifically the manifestation of them joining or embracing the Islamic State influence or ideology. So the response came in last June, and this is where the Couillard government, Philippe Couillard is the premier of the province of Quebec, where he basically presented Bill 59 as the aim to eliminate all forms of hate propaganda. Notice the wording, all forms of hate propaganda. So we're dealing with Islamic radicalization, Islamic terrorism, and they're basically saying all hate propaganda. So the goal of it was to prevent and combat hate speech, incitement against violence, and so on and so forth. But there's been a progress since the last time we spoke about this. Last Friday, Mr. Couillard, due to massive protest against the bill, slightly modified how it will be presented. But this being said, there was a request from what they call over here human rights commissions. The Quebec Human Rights Commission, last November, right after the terror attack, requested more power in order to deal with hate speech. Not incitement to violence necessarily, but hate speech. So the Couillard government just basically are proposing in the bill, and they're giving them what they asked for. They're giving them the power to make law. So what they want to do with this is they would like to have more power to be able to prosecute people that are deemed giving hate speech. What they used to have before, it was only the person that felt offended, that could make a complaint to the Human Rights Commission. And then from there, they would evaluate the case, and then from there on decide if they're going to use the Human Rights Tribunal and prosecute.
That was bad enough because that gave license to all kinds of folks, including these easily offended Islamists, to prosecute people effectively through this Human Rights Commission. So talk about what is likely if this bill were to be adopted.
Well, if this bill will be adopted, that means they basically, Frémont, the president of the Human Rights Commission, said in a radio interview in two conferences that he was targeting specifically groups that would criticize the Islamic religion, as he said, or words that may offend Muslims. And the problem also with the Human Rights Commission, what needs to be understood, and I think for Americans, your Europeans, they may not respond, but for Americans, I think they're going to be able to appreciate this, not positively, though. The Human Rights Commission also has a mandate of militancy. That means they're going to push ideas of how the society has to understand human rights. So they're promoting those ideas. But in a certain way, what needs to be understood is those who are against these ideas, they also have the power to prosecute or penalize people who don't agree with their vision of human rights. So in so many words, these bodies, that's why there's this term, say, it's Soviet-like. It's like a propaganda machine. It's not like. It is, because they have the mandate to do militancy, push their ideas, and they also can penalize, prosecute, and also accuse and condemn those who may not agree with their ideas. This is tremendous power. And because of this, because there's not the freedom of expression, this becomes a propaganda body. In this sense, it's totally undemocratic, extremely dangerous, and they also want to shame people publicly by listing their names on a website. I mean, even pedophiles don't even get that treatment in Canada.
You know, it's interesting that you use that term because, of course, a similar effort was made by the Obama administration, not identical, but the notion was, and I think impelled by the same forces that are at work in Canada now, Mukwege, namely the Organization of Islamic Cooperation's very determined 10-year plan for essentially imposing Sharia's blasphemy and slander restrictions on everyone, Muslim and non-Muslim alike. And Hillary Clinton famously declared, because of the fact that we do have a First Amendment freedom in this country about freedom of speech, that she would nonetheless pursue the use of old-fashioned techniques like shaming and peer pressure to prevent Americans from giving offense to Muslims. So it's not quite the same mechanics as you're talking about in Canada that would be greatly enhanced by this Quebec Bill 59, but it's certainly a similar purpose.
One of the things that it would be worth doing is to study the case to see how these types of commissions or bodies are working, because Frémont has been very vocal, very open about how he sees the mandate. Now, he used terms, and I'm quoting him here, change the way people think, seeking changes in people's attitude, provoking social changes, and listen to this, making the law. And what he meant by making the law is initiate lawsuits without the certainty to win in court. These are his terms. Taking risk to see how far real courts or how real judges will go to accommodate change. To see how his commission, the Quebec Human Rights Commission, to see how far the judges will go to create precedent that will be in line with the QHRC vision.
But this idea of making law by an unaccountable body like the Human Rights Commission, these things are steadily chipping away at freedoms in Canada. And Mark, you've had some ability to monitor what's happening here as well. Is it the case that we're starting to see some of these human rights commissions cropping up in the American context as well?
Yes, I'm not too sure. I think they may have different names and different jurisdiction, and sometimes in the United States it works on a city basis. I think, for example, in New York you have a body that would be pretty similar to the Quebec Human Rights Commission, and I think in California as well they have these types of bodies now. Yes, the tendency is there. These are like, for me, I don't know if it's the appropriate term, but they're like sub-legal structures, which they do have government-recognized powers. But the problem is when they're challenged to Superior Court or Supreme Courts for Canada, they very often, some of the people who are being charged by these Human Rights Commission, they win in Superior Courts. The spirit of the law is almost as if it's like a legal system that was put in place to be able to allow people to break the law.
Isn't that ironic? Unfortunately, there seems to be a lot of that going on with these Islamists and their friends on the left. Mark Lebuy, we've had a marvelous conversation with you about this. There will be much more to talk about in the days ahead. I hope you will keep us abreast of what's happening with Quebec Bill 59, most especially, and keep up the terrific work you do at Point de Bascule. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. We'll talk with you again in the near future. I hope we'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.